Formula for success. In attending a Wednesday evening meeting in a Christian Science church, it was noticed that one lady, who appeared to be the most mature of everyone in the audience, did not require glasses in order to read the text from the hymnal as the group was singing the selected hymns. Mary Baker Eddy commented that she could read the fine print on documents when she was at a so-called human age that was shortly before she left invisible form. And that would have been recorded as about 90 years. This lady seemed to be about that same age group. I made the comment to her that it was wonderful that she did not require glasses. Her response was, "I keep after it." Mary Baker Eddy instructed her students that they should make a concerted effort to keep after it on all the universal beliefs. Of course, that would include everything that is a material sense of life, truth, and intelligence in matter, mortal mind, electricity, everything under the umbrella of animal magnetism. Wentworth Winslow says, think of yourself in a room with a phone where you can pick it up and listen or argue with the other party, and a radio which is tuned in to station KOG and only announces the qualities of God. He warns us not to pick up the phone to listen to any suggestions. When Jesus was in the desert, he faced three major temptations by the quote devil. And in each case, his response was a quotation from the Bible that refuted the suggestion. One of them, for example, was, man does not live by bread alone. Another one was, do not tempt the Lord thy God. And another one was, only worship God. The so-called devil tried to get him to turn rocks into bread, jump off a cliff, and to yield his soul to the devil in exchange for being able to have control over the world. So that's basically the three major temptations for mankind, or a kind of man, which is based on believing in the universal beliefs of life, truth, and intelligence in matter. Unfortunately, it is the rare individual that accepts the instruction from Mary Baker Eddy in a genuine way. In fact, I'm not aware of anyone, and I've been around lifelong Christian Scientists for my whole life, and I'm certainly not one that did it either. But think how one could be a raindrop to help change and stop, neutralize, and reverse universal belief on all the things that are generally involuntarily or voluntarily accepted as being a limitation. I have no excuse. My family were all involved in only Christian Science our whole lives. Our parents were involved at a very young age, and their parents experienced healings, which was the catalyst that enabled our parents to get involved at a young age. And today, it seems like none of the offspring of current families follow in the footsteps of Christian Science at all. The small percentage of churches that are still in existence are basically inactive. There's a few exceptions, but for one service that keeps track of the churches that have been closing versus new ones that have opened, has records going back for 40 or 50 years, and it's been a very steady downtrend. Therefore, it is obvious that what is missing is following the formula. Mary Baker Eddy states on page 146 of Science and Health that divine metaphysics is now reduced to a system, to a form comprehensible by and adapted to the thought of the age in which we live. This system enables the learner to demonstrate the divine principle upon which Jesus' healing was based, and the sacred rules for its present application to the cure of disease. I believe she means disease as being anything that is a dis-ease, any discord whatsoever, anything that is unlike God, anything that is unlike living in the kingdom of God, anything that is unlike being the manifestation of a perfect source, which is what we name God. She gives us the formula in the system. Our website, which is mbeinstitute.org, provides all the tools to be able to understand what the system is and how to follow it, the formula, and how to apply it, how to multiply it, how to reap the benefits of the beautiful treasure, the pearl of great price, that Mary Baker Eddy handed to us on a silver platter. Any one of us can begin to make a difference by reflecting out into the atmosphere of thought the truth which is given to us 7 ways from Sunday, or 7 ways to Sunday, 7 ways to success, which are the 7 synonymous terms for God, and the 4 operators. The 7 synonymous terms for God being included in the definition of God on page 465, which is that God is incorporeal, divine, supreme, infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love. And also in the glossary, states that God is the great I am, all-knowing, all-seeing, all-acting, all-wise, all-loving, and eternal. principle, mind, spirit, soul, life, truth, love, all substance, intelligence. And just below that, the definition of good, which is God, spirit, omniscience, omnipresence, omnipotence, omniaction. What is the formula? All we have to do is think about mathematics. There are 10 digits in mathematics, 0 to 9. The digits of mathematics do us no good whatsoever unless we use the operators. The basic ones are add, subtract, multiply, and divide. The qualities of God do us no good unless we use the operators, which are the four sides of the city, which is the Word, Christ, Christianity, and science. What these terms mean has been explained thoroughly in many other treatments that are on the website. One can go to the main menu and look under topics. And one of the topics is God plus the seven synonyms for God. We explain the formula in detail. Just like if you're going to study mathematics, you can learn how to apply, add, subtract, multiply, and divide to the 10 digits. And in those treatments that are on that page just referred to, we explain how to use the formula that Mary Baker Eddy gave us, as noted on page 146, where she refers to the system, and we explain throughout our treatments how to utilize the Word, Christ, Christianity, and science to apply them to the seven synonymous terms for God. It seems like one of the most prevalent universal beliefs that we are dealing with right now is that we have been brainwashed, we being the average population, have been brainwashed into believing that the government will provide everything for us. But what does the government say? They're promoting a theme that is own nothing, eat bugs, and be happy. That's their formula. They've destroyed many of the food processing facilities, agricultural crops. In fact, they pay farmers not to grow crops. They've destroyed chickens by the tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions. They've killed beef, all other kinds of animals that provide those kinds of food. They've hypnotized the audience, which is the population around the world, to accept the belief that if you don't get a vaccine, you're going to die. When in fact, the vaccine itself includes poison to kill. It's a genocide program. They've put up 5G towers all around the U.S. and in most other countries, except one. And that is another genocide program. That's exactly what 5G is, a genocide program. They've announced that they intend to reduce the population by 94%. That means only 6% will survive. The masses seem to be very complacent. Just go along with it. Other countries, there are active protests, and they're not very peaceful. A violent protest is not recommended under any circumstance. A peaceful protest is recommended. No guns, no violence, no weapons of any kind, just your voice to indicate that you will not accept the so-called New World Order, whereby a few control the population, what is left after they finish their genocide. And no, I'm not going to be eating bugs. And no, I'm not going to give up any property to the government. And no, I'm not going to be happy if they try to force that on me. In fact, I'm not going to accept it. We need to each take our stand. We must reverse the trend, which is right at the edge of the cliff. The formula is simple. Learn what God is. Deny that there is life, truth, and intelligence in matter, mortal mind, mesmerism, hypnotism. Every time we see someone on the street that looks like they're in need, or a stray dog, or an accident, take a stand mentally and deny that that can be real. You're not going to accept it as being an act of God. And the reality is that God is all power. There is nothing that has power except God. Mr. Rawson, one of the greatest practitioners, had wonderful healings. One of them was where a whole load of rocks was dumped on a man, and he made one statement, a few words: there is nothing but God. Now, he obviously had the commitment, the conviction, and he understood what that meant. He just didn't glibly state a few words. However, we can't even form the habit of going to God first unless we start making affirmative statements to change the atmosphere of our experience. No, we should not accept a lack of morals and become as bad or worse than Sodom and Gomorrah. As long as we've got two legs and walking around, there are two sexes. Not 3 or 4 or 10 or 20 or 100. And no, men shouldn't be going in women's restrooms. Children shouldn't be deciding their own fate about what sex they want to be. And yes, we should have marriages in our families if we're going to be having any kind of an institution of marriage. No, that's not what Jesus would recommend, because Jesus recommends that our marriage should be to God. But we've destroyed everything in between, total failure to even be civil and moral and being what Jesus represented, taking the commandments off of all the courthouses. They were on there as a standard. I'm surprised they haven't taken the Bible out where you swear to tell the truth when you're in a court of law. We have no law. The Justice Department is a department for just them. We're on the edge. We have the formula. Our website gives you everything you need to know about how the formula operates and how you can make it work for you. We have to keep after it. Just like the lady in that church said, and just like Mary Baker Eddy obviously did, we have to keep after it. We have to establish a standard, and we have to keep after it. We have to have our own atmosphere of thought be our experience that is positive. Mr. Rawson said the most important thing we can do is to make other people happy. Does anyone care about anyone else? Is there any unity? It seems like we have a little more unity when we have one man that stands up in front of, I don't know how many tens of thousands the audience is. The last one, I think, was like 40,000. And there was several million, if not tens of millions, that were watching the rally on, the media, the internet. But we can't expect someone else to work out our salvation. If they gave us everything on a silver platter, like Mary Baker Eddy did, look what happened. We didn't use what she gave us. We wouldn't use what was given to us by the one man who is probably the most obvious one that is promoting freedom and liberty. So we would probably lose it if we had it given to us on a silver platter. We have to earn it. We have to earn healing. We have to earn a better life. We don't just push a button and make it happen. There is no such thing as a self-driving vehicle that is going to automatically turn a world of chaos into one of kingdom of God. The formula has to be used. It has to be applied. It has to be systematic. It has to be perseverant. You can't be a quitter. If you're in a drought, you can't get a few drops of rain and that's it, and that's going to transform a desert into an oasis. We're in a desert. We're in a spiritual desert. We're talking about spiritual warfare here. And we better pick up our tools and go to work with them. The formula is required. We have to have a systematic, persistent pursuit. Big, successful endeavors don't come about by magic. Bicknell Young, who's respected as being one of the very successful practitioners. In fact, he was called the Dean of Practitioners. He said the biggest problem is that people come to him wanting help with their business and they don't even know how to run their business. They don't even know how to operate a business. They're expecting magic to be performed by going to a practitioner. We have people come to us and they want a practitioner to do it for them. You know, they want to pick up the phone and just delegate it. It doesn't work that way. We have to transform our own consciousness. We give the tools, but the work has to be done by the one that has come to the decision that what they are doing isn't working. And so they're looking for something better, and they're going to have to go to work to get it. Yes, Mary Baker Eddy gave us the formula. She says it right there on page 146. All you have to do is look at the title to the chapters. Where does she start? Well, the preface says, to those leaning on the sustaining infinite, today is big with blessing. One of her first introductory quotes is by Shakespeare. There's nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. She has some other very valuable introductory quotes. She starts with the chapter on prayer. We have to understand what prayer is all about. It's very few pages, 17 pages. We should be able to quote that thing inside and out, upside down, with our hands behind our back and our eyes blindfolded. We should understand what she's talking about, not just quote it glibly. The whole lesson sermon she designed to be an unfoldment over a 7-day period. six sections. The first section is intended to be studied on Monday. Not all six sections, the first section. Focus on the first section. Tuesday, focus on the second section. Wednesday, on the third section. We have on our website historic lessons that were done by Mary Baker Eddy's lesson committee. The most advanced ones the last year before she left, 1909-1910. People rarely look at them. We've got the best there is. They're timeless. Whoever is listening to this, have you actually utilized those Bible lesson sermons? Putnam, Robert C. Putnam, a genius of a Bible scholar, he gave us 10 Bible lessons that covers the entire Bible. 10 lessons. It's only like, I don't know, 160, 170 pages, something like that. All you need to know about the Bible. It's not that you're going to read it in 30 minutes and that's it. There are hundreds of references to particular Bible chapters and Bible verses that support everything he says in his 169 pages, which is basically a summary of all the documentation that he gives you in footnotes and preparatory readings. Everything is from the Bible, so you don't have to go look at, you know, 50 or 100 other books. He has done all the research. I think it was 30 years he was a Sunday school teacher. Exceptional Christian Science practitioner and Bible scholar. And he gives that benefit to us. I looked for years for a good Bible course. Probably 20 years. There is one that was very good, but most of them were very dry. My Christian Scientist. But his is very direct and to the point and gives you as much depth if you really want to go and research the background on anything that he says. He's got it right there. Chapter and verse. We better understand that there's a formula. We better understand that mathematics is not any different. Music is not any different. Chemistry, doesn't matter what you're doing, there's a principle that's involved. And there's a very definite principle involved in how to study Christian Science. Mary Baker Eddy tells us. She didn't give that to us until about 1907, maybe 1906, that she gave us that paragraph. It has now been reduced to a system. She told her assistant, Laura Sargent, she said, there it is, I've hidden it. If I hide it anymore, they'll never find it. It's hidden but in plain sight. Because she explains. We've got 7 synonyms. We've got 4 sides to the city. Then there's also different other things that we need to be aware of, and that is the relative versus the absolute. From what standpoint is she making this statement? I was an usher in a lecture one time, and a fella came up to me and said, you know, he said, I really like what Mary Baker Eddy writes, but she's got 2 things in Science and Health that are conflicts. And he was referring to the fact that she says there is no sin, sickness, or death, and then she tells you how to heal it. Well, he didn't understand that there's more than one level. She speaks from the relative level, and she speaks from the absolute level. And there's a couple of grades in between the top and the bottom to, you know, to give you the stair steps. to get up to the divine. The lowest level is the Christian Science level, because that is where we have to deal with the nitty-gritty. You know, there's a problem there. So we have to go and think about it from a relative standpoint. Yes, there is sin, sickness, and death to human belief. And we start with the human belief. So we have to say, okay, well, what is the problem here? We have to, she gives us four steps. One is the analysis. One is the exposure. You know, finding out what the problem is, exposing it, annihilating it, the third step. And the fourth step is demonstrating it. So we have to do the analysis. We don't go to a doctor. Well, if you want to go to the doctor and forget Christian Science. You know, everyone has to work out their own salvation. Mr. Rawson, one of the greatest, as I've mentioned, practitioners of all time, he's the one that discovered retroactive healing, where the healing took place and effect before he was even contacted, because he was able to overcome the belief of time. He did it over 500 times. Mr. Winslow, another very fine practitioner, we have all of his books on our website, as well as many references from Mr. Rawson. But Mr. Winslow says, if you have a pain, the worst thing you can do is go and try to get it analyzed, get it diagnosed. He said, pretty soon you'll be told this thing and then that thing, and then you'll have this other pain and it'll be named by this other thing. He's the one that said, imagine you've got a telephone and a radio. The radio is announcing the qualities of God. The phone is something that rings its head off, trying to get you to pick it up and argue with it. He said, don't pick up the phone. If you got a pain, don't be picking it up and listening to what this pain might be. It'll spread. It'll magnify. It'll, you know, it'll give you whatever you want to hear. If you watch something on television that tells you got to wear glasses, or tells you got to take this medicine or that medicine or whatever, or you should be drinking this alcohol or smoking this cigarette or taking this drug or whatever, says, well, you're opening yourselves up to chaos. So anyway, Mr. Rawson says, when I said everyone has to work out their own salvation, Mr. Rawson says, don't worry about what someone else thinks about what God is. And of course, Mary Baker Eddy says the same thing. She says, take care of your own consciousness. She says, you'll be plenty busy not worrying about somebody else. You know, let them work out their own salvation. Don't try to plant thoughts in their head or try to criticize them because they don't seem to have the same level of understanding about God that you do. Who knows? Might be like Dale Carnegie. Dale Carnegie says, you better not be very critical of somebody, because tomorrow you may agree with them. And he also says, if you've got a big problem, write it down. Stick it in a file cabinet. Don't look at it for 6 months. This was before they had computers back 100 years ago or so, 120 years ago. He says, you look at it 6 months later and you'd be surprised. Your view will be totally different. Problem, or most of the problems would have been worked out, but he says, worrying about them, forget it. Put the worry down on a piece of paper and stick it in the file cabinet. In other words, get it out of sight, out of mind. So Mr. Rawson says, don't worry about what other people think God is. Like Mary Baker Eddy says, you know, take care of your own thought. He says, everyone knows, this is Mr. Rawson now, that was one of the most brilliant practitioners of all time, that developed the method of retroactive healing. He said, don't worry about what other people think about what God is. He says, everyone knows so little about it. And he was like the greatest practitioner. He says, everyone knows so little about what God is, forget about trying to explain it to someone else. Or whatever their concept is of God, leave it alone. Let them work out their own salvation. If they come to you for help, that's another story. But if they come to you for help, they've got to be at a point, like John Morgan says, about the chapter. Well, I'll tell you in a minute. But anyway, the point is that unless someone comes to you for help, you don't even think about what they're thinking. In fact, one of the greatest practitioners that I've met personally, lifelong lady who had phenomenal healings, I listened to her on a Wednesday evening meeting one time, and I was traveling and going through the area, and she talked about someone that had called her for help. And of course, she never gave anything that was personal, because that's highly confidential. She said, as soon as they got done talking, telling her about their woes, and she let them talk, because people have to get it off of their chest. She said, I knew the first thing I had to do was to totally cleanse my thought of everything they told me. Because, you know, they were talking about their woes, their problems, whatever it was, sin, sickness, death, whatever. Whatever the problem was. She said, the first thing I had to do was to get that all clean out. When I heard her say that, I mean, I'd never heard anybody say that. I just finished class instruction. I think I was still in it. I think it was Wednesday in the middle of the class instruction. My teacher never talked like that. In fact, that's how I happened to be there. I had to travel to go to where the teacher that I'd chosen was teaching the class. And then on Wednesday night, we all went together, the class did, to the church. And she gave that testimony. So when I heard that, I said, that's the woman I've got to meet. So I walked up to her. And I said, you've really gave such a fresh thought about how to approach healing that if I have a need, I'd like to be able to call you. And I was in business, had quite a few people working for me in different locations, and so there was always something that was a temptation to yield to problems. So, you know, I did end up calling her to for that purpose. But anyway, she said, first thing she said is, well, she knew I was taking class with this other woman because we all came together with the teacher at the class. It was obvious to her that was what was going on. She said, well, you'd have to get permission from your teacher. I'll be happy to talk to you, but she would need to give permission. And I really respected her for it because she didn't want to interfere. So I went to I walked right over to where the teacher was, still in the church. You know, the church had just finished the Wednesday evening meeting, so everybody was kind of mulling around and talking and so forth. So I went right over to her and I said, I'd really like to have this lady be involved if I need any kind of help. But she needs your permission. She said, yeah, she's very fine practitioner, very fine woman, and gets wonderful results, and I'd have no objection whatsoever. So I walked back across where the lady was, and told her what her response was. And she says, okay. And I didn't have anything to talk to her about at that time, but, you know, later I did. And one of the greatest decisions I ever made, because she had such a fresh thought on how to do it. And of course, the key was to get a better understanding about God. I mean, don't try to solve a problem, but it's the other way around. The symptom is only a symbol that you need to go digging. Mary Baker Eddy stated that most people work on the wrong thing. They would come to her because they couldn't solve a problem, and she said, well, that's not what you should be working on. You should be working on this other. And she was so spiritual, she would know exactly what the problem was without without even having any conversation with the person. She'd be able to sense what was going on. As the other person tried to explain what the problem was, she would be able to analyze and know that was only a decoy. Evil is so deceptive. It tries to mock truth. In fact, it's been said that truth is defined by its opposite. If you multiply 3 times 7, and you get a figure of anything besides 21, it doesn't work, and you know there's a problem and something's wrong, but you don't know what it is until you go back and check it. Say, oh, well, that's, you know, if you haven't memorized your your math tables, then you look at them and you say, oh, well, this table says that 3 times 7 is 21. It's not 19, or it's not 20.999 or 21.0001 or whatever. It's 21. Nothing else. So anyway, I learned so much from that lady. So grateful. Well, in any event, I don't know that I'm adding anything fresh here. These are the thoughts that have come to me to explain about how important it is to use the formula, because it's like anything else. It's a principle. If you're running a business, like Bicknell the Young says, you got to know your business, whatever it is. Well, if you're going to try to work out a problem, you got to know how to do it. Mr. Rosen states that you've got to deny whatever is appearing as a symptom as being real. And then, like Mary Baker Eddy says, you've got to explain the reason why. So that's what he recommends, to jump after a few words, very few words, of denying any reality being attached to something that's discordant, to then explain it away with the truth. And he did a book called Treatment or Healing by True Prayer, and in there are 1,315 different ailments. And he gives what the belief is about that ailment in a very few words. You know, I don't know, 5 words, 2 words, 10 words, 20 words, whatever it is. It's very, very brief, just to let you know that this is what the problem is. And then he recommends going immediately to declaring the truth about that. Okay? For example, if you break an arm, okay, an arm, and he analyzes what the major parts of the body are supposed to be doing, like fingernails are details, okay? The arm is power. You know, the heart is, I don't know, life. Anyway, he goes through everything. And it's an encyclopedia. A to Z, we call it here at the Mary Baker Eddy Institute. It's the A to Z. A to Z encyclopedia of how to heal. And so it's very specific because it tells you what the universal belief is about it, and then it tells you, and then it gives you statements about why that can't be real. For example, if somebody is weak, they have no strength or whatever, and then it would talk about, well, God's, you know, the Bible states, Mary Baker Eddy states, you know, that God is omnipotent, the only power. There is no other power. There is only one mind, the divine mind, not mortal mind, but the divine mind. Anyway, I don't want to get into details because we've got a lot of information on the website about it. We have every one of those 1,315 items indexed alphabetically. So, I mean, doesn't matter what the problem is, you're going to probably find it there, and it'll tell you what the belief is about it, and it will tell you what the corrective reversal is. In other words, the counterfact. Mary Baker Eddy calls it the counterfact, and then the belief is, I call it theory. You know, the material theory versus the counterfact. One is a theory and the other is a fact. Just like about God. These insurance companies, fraud from day one, basically. They sell you life insurance, but it's really death insurance, but they don't want to call it death insurance because they say nobody will buy it. I mean, you know, everything about them is deceptive. So anyway, if you have your house destroyed by flood or big fire or tornado or whatever, they'll say, well, that's an act of God, so it doesn't, you're not covered. Well, anyway, whatever the problem is, you can look it up in that encyclopedia, and then you can work with the seven synonymous terms for God, the four operators of the Word, Christ, Christianity, and Science. Like I say, all this is explained. As a matter of fact, just go to the menu and look under topics and click on the selection that is God plus the seven synonyms. And there's eight pages. Eight, you know, everything you need is there. The formula, don't forget, anything has to have a system and a structure. That's what principle is. It's a system and structure. Love is the plan and design. We explain all this in all these other treatments. Plan and design. And, of course, Mary Baker Eddy states that love, one of the definitions of love is oil, which is spiritual inspiration. And that dissolves all friction. So the love has to permeate the mind, spirit, soul, principle, life and truth, as well as its self-love, can solve any problem. I read an article about a family that were robbed. Guy came in and at gunpoint. They didn't let their truth vary one bit. They knew nothing but good could happen. They knew that the only idea of God is one that is spiritual. And they couldn't lose anything, and they couldn't be robbed of anything or anything else. The guy left with all the goods that he was stealing. I don't know what it was. I forget whether it was jewelry or cash or gold or whatever. He walked out of there with it, and in a few minutes he came back. They never stopped thinking about the honesty of man and all those good things they should be thinking about. And he came back in a few minutes. And he brought everything back, and he said, I am really sorry. I mean, he just apologized from one end to the other. He says, I have no idea what came about me. He said, here are your things, and please forgive me. That's what love does. That's what love does. It dissolves the discord. Dissolves it. Gone. We got to remember one thing above all else. and that is, there is nothing but God. God is the only source, the only manifestation, and the manifestation includes the source. God is all in all. And also, God knows nothing about time, because time is limitation. So it doesn't take time to solve a problem or to bring about wholeness or completeness. It takes change of thought. There is nothing but God. Amen.